ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Don't have enough time to stay across all the latest news? ABC News Top Stories podcast explains the biggest breaking news stories and why they matter in less than 2 minutes. So you can hit play and get updated while brushing your teeth or making your lunch. It's always up to date, ready whenever you're ready to get across the day's news. Just search ABC News Top Stories podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts and hit follow or favourite to add us to your playlist.
Almost 2 weeks into the war in Iran, it's still not clear what Donald Trump's endgame is. And he says the war has been won, but it's still going. So, did the US president entirely misjudge what a war of this nature would entail? And how significant the ripple effects would be across the world? Today, staff writer at The Atlantic magazine, Tom Nichols, on why the Trump administration is strategically incompetent and why he thinks the president is suffering from victory disease. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Tom, since the start of this war, people have really been trying to figure out why Donald Trump started it in the first place, because his end game has been so unclear, hasn't it?
Yeah, he's given several rationales for why he started this war, at least 8 or 9. And every time he's asked what would constitute victory, he says things like unconditional surrender. But surrender to whom? For what? What are the actual objectives here?
To the great, proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take.
Our objectives are clear. First, we're destroying Iran's missile capabilities, and you see that.
We totally obliterated Iran's nuclear potential. We obliterated it, but they started again. That's why we got to finish it, right?
Finally, we're ensuring that the Iranian regime cannot continue to arm, fund, and direct terrorist armies outside of their borders.
He seems to have whittled them down now to destroying the Iranian Navy, destroying their nuclear program, and destroying their missile stocks. But that's today. Mm. So, you know, tomorrow he could go back to regime change and, peace in the Middle East and no more terrorism and all the other things that he's put out there as well.
So there doesn't seem to be a sound strategy. And that's because, and in your words, the Trump administration is simply incompetent.
Well, they are strategically incompetent. And this is not a team with a lot of deep foreign policy experience. Certainly not a lot of deep national security experience. And, you know, it's not a good idea to go to war with a president and a secretary of defense who, you know, primarily think in terms of TV spots rather than any kind of deep strategic thinking. There's simply no strategy here. It's not just that it's a bad strategy. It's that there's no strategy at all that I can discern whatsoever.
And so many conflicting messages, right? One minute, Donald Trump saying he's going to end this war soon. The next, he's suggesting it's going to go on for a while yet. There's just no clarity, none.
Well, he's speaking to several different audiences. When he says the war is going to end soon, he's trying to calm the markets. And you can see the markets yo-yoing up and down every time he says this war is going to go on for a long time, and the markets plunge. And then he says, no, really, I think we're wrapping it up. We're just about done. And then the markets come back up. Mm. And I think he never expected to be in this situation. I think he really thought something like Vladimir Putin in Russia, who thought that, you know, Ukraine was going to collapse in 3 days. I think Trump just assumed that hitting the Iranians with this onslaught of American power would collapse the regime and, you know, Iranians would take to the streets and greet the Americans as liberators, even though we're not actually on the ground there. So I think he just didn't think through what could happen if this drags on and the Iranians don't play according to the script that he had kind of written out in his head, I think.
So he wasn't expecting this sort of fight from Iran, you know, attacking the Gulf nations, disrupting oil very effectively through the Strait of Hormuz, you know, which has sent fuel prices soaring around the globe. What, Donald Trump didn't expect that response?
I'm not sure that Donald Trump knows where the Straits of Hormuz are, but I think he just didn't think it through about what happens if the Iranian regime, which has been preparing for an American attack for decades, what happens if they don't just throw their arms in the streets and run away? And I imagine that there were people around him, people like General Kane and others, who probably tried to raise some of these issues. But I mean, look, this is a White House where everybody is wearing the same pair of shoes because Donald Trump gave them to him. So, you know, this is not a White House that's going to have a lot of outside of the box thinking or, you know, principled arguments. And I'm sure other people thought of this, but I don't think it's occurred to Trump or his closest advisors, and certainly not to the Secretary of Defense, who is in way over his head at this point with the biggest war America's run in 20 years.
Well, Tom, let's delve a bit further into what it is that is driving Donald Trump at this point. Now, you think he has a bit of an old problem, if you like, which is called victory disease. So you better explain what that is before we get into how Donald Trump has actually caught it.
Yeah, national leaders can sometimes fall prey to something that historians have long referred to as victory disease, which is that when you have very competent military forces that are winning battles on the ground, you start to believe that winning these individual battles is the same thing as winning the war or achieving your strategic goals, and that you should keep going, that you win, so you try again and you keep you seek another battle. And if you win that one, then you keep going. Even though in the piece I wrote for The Atlantic, I pointed out that, you know, this is how Napoleon ended up chasing these kinds of wins all the way into the snows of Moscow. And this is how Xerxes ended up on the southern tip of Greece getting annihilated at the Battle of Salamis. And this is how the Axis ended up with the Japanese somehow thinking that their ability to win battles at sea, and particularly at Pearl Harbor, meant that they could defeat the Americans. These are battles that convince you that somehow you can keep winning. And of course, you become convinced of that right up until the moment that disaster strikes. And I think President Trump, because of relatively easy wins in small places like Venezuela, or being able to do a one-and-done strike in a place like Nigeria or Syria, and even with Operation Midnight Hammer, this one night of bombing on Iranian nuclear sites, somehow got it into his head that all these wins means that knocking over Iran itself and collapsing the regime would be relatively easy. And that's classic victory disease.
And also, Tom, he does continually talk about how great the military is, doesn't he?
Right.
The United States has the strongest military the world has ever seen. I rebuilt our military in my first term. There's never been a military like we possess.
And it is highly sophisticated. Frankly, it is very competent, the U.S. military, isn't it? But it is not flawless.
No. And the school in Tehran that it looks like now that the Americans bombed that, thinking that it was still part of the naval base, which it was, you know, 10 years ago. It looks like we were using old maps that hadn't been updated, and it was probably avoidable had we updated those maps.
And a preliminary military inquiry, of course, has found that the U.S. was responsible for that. I mean, that's a tragedy, right? Iran says 175 people, mainly students, children, were killed in that strike.
It's absolutely a tragedy, but it's also, there's never been a major military operation of this size that doesn't have some of these terrible, tragic errors in them, including friendly fire incidents. Apparently a Kuwaiti shot down three American aircraft in the first week of the war because of miscommunication. That's not to excuse or dismiss any of it. It's a terrible mistake to have made, especially on the first day of the war, before all of the kind of chaos and fog sets in. This, at the very beginning, really should have been an avoidable error that early. Normally, you see something like that when chaos and again, the fog of war kind of sets in. But by and large, the ability to fly, you know, hundreds of missions dropping thousands of, you know, bombs, with very few casualties, with pinpoint accuracy, with really kind of defanging a lot of the Iranian military right out of the gate. That is the kind of competence and operational excellence that national leaders can then mistake for winning the war somehow.
Yeah.
And what they don't realize is that a very competent military doesn't mean that you're achieving your strategic goals, in part because you have to define what they are. And Donald Trump, you know, if you want to know what Donald Trump's strategic goals are, you have to check your watch because they change every few hours.
And partly why President Trump has this so-called victory disease. Now, of course, just in relation to that school, though, Tom, the messaging again from Donald Trump, you know, it's all over the place, right? First he says Iran hit the school, then he says he doesn't even know about it, then he says he doesn't even know about the preliminary findings of this inquiry.
A new report says the military investigation has found it was the United States that struck the school.
I don't know about
it. Trump is just congenitally incapable of taking responsibility for anything when things go bad. We've seen this again and again during his time as president. His go-to response when he's asked these questions is he says, well, I don't know about it. Well, you're the president. You're supposed to know about it. You know, if we've accidentally bombed a school and killed 175 people, including a lot of kids, you really can't say I don't know about it. Mm. But that's very much the president's personality. He just does not like to have to step up and shoulder responsibility unless it's something that's to his personal advantage.
All right, well, Tom, we are still in the midst of this war, of course, but why don't we consider then what Donald Trump might have in mind next? He is already talking about overthrowing the government of Cuba, isn't he? He's talking about that again this week.
As we achieve a historic transformation in Venezuela, we're also looking forward to the great change that will soon be coming to Cuba. Cuba's at the end of the line. They're very much at the end of the line.
And it may be a friendly takeover. It may not be a friendly takeover. It wouldn't matter.
And again, kind of a classic manifestation of victory disease. Well, I won in Venezuela. I think I'm winning in Iran. You know, what's next on the menu? Now, you know, maybe I can win in Cuba. And I think the other thing is that the president, I think a lot of what you're seeing here is kind of glory seeking. That he really thinks that he's carving a place for himself in history as the liberator, you know, of Venezuela, the liberator of Iran, the liberator of Cuba. And, you know, it's bonkers. I mean, it's just a completely bonkers idea that in the middle of a war with a large country that you're already sort of planning your next war on your own doorstep. But again, I don't think there's anyone around the president to say, you know, cool your jets. Maybe this isn't a good idea, or at the very least, it's not something we ought to be talking about right now while there are still U.S. forces in action a half a world away.
So if Donald Trump ultimately wants to be seen as a brilliant strategist, does he? But there's no political wisdom involved in any of that.
I don't know if he cares about being seen as a brilliant strategist, but I think he wants to be seen as a hero and a conqueror and a liberator. And, you know, I mean, remember, this is a guy who has lived with burning resentment that the world has refused to give him a Nobel Peace Prize. Mm. And I think he's decided that if he can't get a peace prize, that he'll launch a lot of wars and knock off a lot of bad regimes, and someone will build a statue to him somewhere for doing that. I don't think we should exhaust ourselves looking for deep meanings here in a man who is not very deep.
Mm, all right. Well, Tom, what do you think? How long do you think he'll keep this war going before he moves on to his next mission?
I think it's a fool's errand to try to predict what Donald Trump is going to do next. Mm-hmm. I suspect that he is looking for off-ramps. Trump tends to get bored with things that don't go his way. He gets tired of them very quickly. I think one of the reasons you're seeing him out there saying we're winning, we've won. He was at a rally just now saying we won. We won in the first hour.
And we've won. Let me say, we've won. You know, you never like to say too early you won. We won. We won the bet. In the first hour, it was over.
That's the kind of thing he says when he knows things are going poorly. And I imagine because one of the few things he does care about is the health of the markets and whether or not people are making money, that may push him to an earlier end to this war. But he's also getting himself in pretty deep. I mean, he's talked about, you know, he won't rule out ground troops. I think he's in a bubble and he thinks this is all very popular. So my guess is that this does not drag on for weeks on end. On the other hand, who knows what he's being told about this and what the costs are that he may perceive for having to back down, especially if it leaves the Iranian regime in place. That's the thing I think he didn't expect.
Tom Nichols is a staff writer at The Atlantic. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Cinnamon Nippard. Audio production by Anna John. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily will be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.